April 16, 2012, Bhaktivedanta Manor in London. And this is part two. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, Bhakti and the Yoga Ladder. So yesterday we looked in a very general way at the characteristics of bhakti, the qualification for bhakti, the process of bhakti, the characteristics of the yoga ladder, the process of the yoga ladder, the qualifications for the yoga ladder. Right, what were the qualifications for bhakti? Be a jiva. What's the qualifications for starting the yoga ladder? You have to be pious, yes. Who delivers you in bhakti? Krishna. Okay, now we're going to go into much more depth with each system in terms of stages. So yesterday was sort of an overview. Today we're going to look at step by step. What are the stages of bhakti? What are the stages of the yoga ladder? And how do they relate to each other? And tomorrow is a class for those of you who really want humility. It's the qualities that are achieved by one who's in bhakti. So good thing to read if ever you become proud. So we'll be meditating on the different qualities of one who's attained the peaceful platform of bhakti. And as I said yesterday, for those of you who weren't here, I'm interested in detailing how the progress of bhakti is described in the scriptures and by the acharyas. So far I found 18 different descriptions. And these descriptions are not all just different words of the same thing. They're looking at different aspects of the maturation of bhakti. And there's a sequence given in chapter 12, which is what we're going to be focusing on right now. And when I heard Dwijamani Prabhu of Philadelphia, who's a professor in Sanskrit and a disciple of Ravindasri Prabhu, when he was explaining this sequence while talking about Bhagavatam 3.25.25, I realized that I hadn't understood it properly. And we went back then to the commentaries, particularly Baladeva Vijayabhushanan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I've also done quite a bit of a consultation with Banu Maharaj in putting together this presentation. And in the process of really looking at chapter 12, I realized that many of us have a lot of confusion about what is bhakti. And we often confuse bhakti with the yoga ladder in our own practice. And if we don't confuse it in our own practice, then it's nice to know about this for our preaching. So today is going to be 8 through 12. First, I'll read through just the English. Can all of you follow me at this speed? Because I know many of you have English as a second, third, or fourth language. Are you managing with my New York speed? Or do I need to slow down? You're fine, but anybody else? Anybody else feel I need to slow down? You're from New York. You're also from New York. New Jersey. I'm also from New York and New Jersey. So many of us come from New York and New Jersey. Okay, if I do go too fast for anyone, or if I use some English vocabulary that's difficult for you, please let me know. Okay, starting with text 8, I'm just going to read the English. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always without a doubt. My dear Arjuna, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. Now here we're going to look just briefly at the Sanskrit, because I'm going to be referring to the Sanskrit throughout this presentation. Krishna says, abhyasa yoga tato mam ichaptam dananjaya. Abhyasa yoga. So Srila Prabhupada's translating this as the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. The words used in the Sanskrit are abhyas yoga. Anyone know what abhyas means? Practice. The literal meaning of abhyas is repetition, doing something over and over. Now, the next text starts with abhyase. So if you can't do this abhyasa, if you can't do this repetition, and by the way, we're going to look at repetition of what? So if you cannot practice the regulations of bhakti yoga, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. And we have an incredible purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that we're going to look at for this verse that I think will give all of us a lot of hope and enthusiasm. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then just try to act giving up all the results of your work and try to be self-situated. So here in the Sanskrit, it's sarva karma pala tyagam. Pala means fruit. Tyaga is renounce. Renounce the fruit of your work. If you cannot take to this practice, by the way, is referring back to Abhyasa Yoga, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. So text 12 is referring back to text 9. It's not referring to text 11. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation, and better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action, for by such renunciation one can attain peace of mind. So here again we have this karma pala tyagas, giving up the fruits of work, and tyagak chantir anantaram. Chagat chantir anantaram. Chagat is by such renunciation. Chantir is peace. Anantaram, at the end. At the end of renunciation of the fruits of work, you will find peace. Okay, remember our goal. So the Acharyas have said that the goal of that given in chapter 12 is spiritual loving service for Shyama Sundar. All right, now the principle of this chapter is that there's good processes, best, acceptable, in order to achieve that goal. So if you want to travel from one place to another, the fastest way is a plane, you know, then a car, maybe a boat, then a bicycle. Now this is another important principle. It's better to be successful at a lower level than to fail at a higher level. It's better to be successful at a lower level than to fail at a higher level. It's better to be successful at a lower level than to fail at a higher level. And what's best is not what's best absolutely. What's best is what's best for me and what's best for me now. So like Rupa Goswami says, the best place to live is... Oh, higher, come on. Radhakund. Does that mean it's the best place for me? Does that mean it's the best place for me now? You know, just because it's the best place doesn't mean it's the best place for me or the best place for me now. So one, and here we have a tow truck. So if you have a broken car, it might be better for you to take a bicycle. A bicycle's better than a broken car. You can say the airplane's the fastest way, but if you don't know how to fly or you don't have enough fuel, you're far better off driving. We've seen a lot of people say, well, the sannyas ashram is the best. I'm going to take that. But they don't know how to fly. And they crash. And then the poor little grihastha on his bicycle makes advancement while the fallen sannyasi's in the hospital, recovering from his crash. You follow? So, you know, what's best? What's best? But what's best is not necessarily what's best for me, and it's not necessarily what's best for me now. What's best for me is going to change over my life. The idea of the ashrams is a progression over life. And as we hopefully advance in bhakti, what's best for me will change. If you're really interested in this principle, I would suggest that you read Bhakti Loka by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I mean, I suggest you read it anyway. It's a lovely book. It's an explanation of texts 2 and 3 of Upadeshamrita. But the section on Niyamagraha, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about stages, and he talks about how the rules change as you go through the different stages. And one should not stay at a lower stage than they're capable of. If you're capable of progressing, you should progress. And nor should one imitate a higher stage than one is capable of. So many times we understand this principle as don't go too fast. But this principle is also don't go too slowly. If you're ready for initiation, take initiation. If you're ready to move into the Vanaprastha ashram, you move into the Vanaprastha ashram. Now, if you're ready to make a further commitment, you make a further commitment. So it works both ways. Okay, what is the best process to reach the goal? What was the goal again?
Loving
Loving service to? So this is, of course, from text 8. Have fixed mind and intelligence on Krishna. Fixed. No deviation. In a constant state of samadhi. We talked a little bit yesterday about samadhi with that lovely purport. Anybody remember from which verse in the 12th chapter where Prabhupada says it, when you're in the market, you're in samadhi? 12:20 is very important purport. It's the key to the whole chapter. But 12:2, Prabhupada talks about you're in the market shopping and you're in samadhi. So that is the best process. Now this is still a process. Keep in mind that text 8 is still process. It's still abhideya. It's not the goal. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says this best process, concentrate your mind on Krishna only. Remember only Krishna, that form of Shyama Sundar with yellow cloth and forest garland, and not the impersonal Brahman. Fix your intelligence upon Krishna. Continually reflect on the statements of scripture using intelligence, which will result in meditation. Such contemplation is called manana. Thus you will attain residence near Krishna. So this is the process of engaging one's mind fully in Krishna. Actually, we should look at this just for another moment. I don't have time today to get into this in depth. But if you look at Nectar of Instruction, text 8 is where you will find this process of verse 8 in the 12th chapter detailed. In the purport to Nectar of Instruction, text 8, Srila Prabhupada, quoting Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, talks about 5 stages of meditation and 5 stages of the middle stage of meditation. This is further delineated by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jiva Dharma. It is also discussed in Manashiksha of Raghunath Das Goswami, particularly the 5 stages of the middle stage are discussed there. And just, it's also discussed by Srila Prabhupada in the 3rd canto of the Bhagavatam. I don't remember the exact verse. It's in the discussion by Lord Kapiladeva, where he talks about how you use the mind as a hook to capture the Lord, and eventually you become free from all activities of the mind. So those are the stages of meditation. And it's something like making burfi. Who here has ever made real burfi? Not powdered milk burfi, but real burfi. Anybody here made real burfi? Okay, more of you have to get in the kitchen. So the way you make burfi is you take milk and you boil it, and you get it at a simmer boil where it's not going to boil over, but it's boiling. And you can be doing other things. You can be making the rice and the dal. And you go to your milk and you stir it sometimes so it doesn't burn. Then you get to a point where you have to stir it all the time. Otherwise, it's going to burn. You can't pay attention to almost anything else in the kitchen, and you're just stirring it and scraping it. And then it becomes like kheer. And then it becomes like burfi, and finally like para. It becomes more and more and more and more concentrated. So this process in text 8 is you're fixing your mind on Krishna. You're fixing your mind on Krishna. And text 8 is starting from the kheer stage. In text 8, we're already at kheer. You're constantly stirring. You don't stop for a moment. Constantly stirring. If the mind wanders any place, you immediately can pull it back. Instantly. You're constantly absorbed in Krishna. And in order to achieve the goal of Shyama Sundar, you have to come to the burfi para stage. So in this constant thinking of Krishna, your meditation gets more and more concentrated. And it gets more and more concentrated, then it becomes eventually samadhi. And just again to say very, very briefly, there's 2 levels of samadhi. One level of samadhi is on the mind, and one level of samadhi is the manifestation of the spiritual world in the heart by the grace of Krishna. This is a process. It's still a process. This text 8 is not talking about the goal. And this process is constant absorption of the mind. Now, who can do this process? In order to do this process, you already have to have your mind at the Kier stage. So what are some of the symptoms Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport? That when you chant Hare Krishna, Radha and Krishna are dancing on your tongue. You're experiencing Radha and Krishna dancing on your tongue when you chant Hare Krishna. That you're experiencing that Krishna is directly accepting the food you're offering. And you're not living on the material platform. You have your transcendental vision. You see the world spiritually. So if one is at this platform, one can immediately go to the process given in text 8, which is constant absorption of the mind and intelligence in Krishna. What do we call this process? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, commenting on text 8, says we call this process Raganuga Bhakti. The goal is not Raganuga Bhakti. The goal is Ragatmaka Bhakti. So the process to attain Ragatmaka Bhakti is Raganuga Bhakti. And it is still a process of sadhana. Okay, suppose we're not qualified. Suppose we look at these things we just discussed. What? Which one? Okay, Ragatmaka Bhakti, you're already realized your spiritual form, that's prema. And you're already associating with Radha Krishna and the cowherd boys, Mother Yasoda, Nandamarj, in Goloka Vrindavan. That's Ragatmaka Bhakti. And you may be still apparently walking around in the world. But actually you're living in Goloka Vrindavan. That's Ragatmaka Bhakti. Raganuga Bhakti is you're at the point where you can fix your mind fully on Krishna. You're deepening your stages of meditation. You deepen your stages of meditation on Krishna until you're in samadhi of the mind. Then Krishna is attracted to your mental activities, as Lord Kapiladev says, like the fish is attracted to the hook. And being attracted to your activities of mental concentration, he manifests in the mind. The spiritual world manifests in the mind. Then you move from what Prabhupada calls lifeless yoga to real yoga, as he explains in the third canto. At that point, one starts to fully realize, gradually, but fully realize one's spiritual identity, what is one's eternal name and form, what is one's eternal service, and so forth. So that is that okay? All right. Okay, suppose one's not qualified. Suppose one says, okay, my milk's on the pot, but it's not cured yet. It's still milk. You know, you look at that and say, whoa, I can't do that. So the step to Raganuga Bhakti is Abhyas Yoga, practicing to fix your mind in the trance of samadhi. And this is explained in the sixth chapter. From wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control in the self. So this is you're in the kitchen and you keep going to your pot and you keep stirring it. Then you get distracted by something else, and then you go back to your pot and you stir it again. You get distracted by something else, you go back to your pot and you're stirring it again. So you keep coming back. You're practicing to fix the mind. You're pulling the mind back. You're pulling the mind back. You're pulling the mind back. This is the essence of Abhyas Yoga. The essence of Abhyas Yoga is repetition, repeatedly pulling the mind and intelligence back to Krishna until the mind becomes steady as a candle in a windless place, at which point then one is qualified for Raganuga Bhakti. We should also make a little side note that Bhanu Swami pointed out to me that those who are on the path to Vaikuntha rather than on the path to Goloka Vrindavan, text 8 for them represents Vaidhi Bhakti with Bhava rather than Raganuga Bhakti. So that's just a little note. Although generally the acharyas understand the goal of chapter 12 as Shyama Sundar and Vrindavan. Yes. Yes. But generally chapter 12 is understood, especially Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is understanding chapter 12 as the goal is Shyama Sundar and Vrindavan. But we've included that text 8 can also be talking about Vaidhi Bhakti with Bhava just for completeness. And Prabhupada explains that this Abhyas Yoga is already on the transcendental platform. This is not bhakti performed in the modes of material nature. In order to do abhyas yoga, one has to already be situated on the transcendental platform. That practice itself is on the transcendental platform. And Prabhupada explains, what is the process? The process is we're waking up something that's already there. We shouldn't misunderstand this practice to be like the practice of a ballet dancer. So ballet dancing is not innate in the living entity. We're not natural ballet dancers. You can learn, less like the ballet dancers, the women in particular, they stand on these toe shoes. And a practiced ballet dancer can stand on toe shoes, not constantly, but continually, not continuously, but continually for hours. So if you see an expert ballet dancer, they go down for a moment and they go right back up. And there's some support in the shoe, but basically they've trained their muscles to be able to do that by practice. But this practice that Krishna is recommending is not like that. This is practice to do something that is inherent and is natural. Exactly like walking is natural in a child. So as soon as a baby's born, the midwife or the doctor, they take something called the Apgar score to see how healthy the baby is. And one item of that, I believe there's 10 items, is you hold the newborn baby up and you see if when you hold it up, touching its feet to the ground, whether the child will take some walking steps. So this is one indication of health. So walking is inherent in the body even of a newborn baby, although children don't generally start to walk until somewhere between ages 1 and 2. And when they start to walk, it's not that the child gets up. It's not that the child's crawling around and then one day they get up and run away. Except unless they're Sukadeva Goswami. But it's a very, it's a very slow process. So they pull up on something and they stand up for a second and then they fall down again and they're so happy that they stood up. And everybody else is happy. And then they stand up for another 3 seconds. And finally they stand up without holding on to something. And they take one step. And then they fall down again. And then they take another step. And then they fall down again. Another step. Like that. What comes out is something natural. And once you've got it, you don't need to practice it anymore. We don't need to practice walking anymore. Right? No one in this room needs to practice walking. I mean, obviously, if we put our legs in a cast and, lay down in bed for a few months, we'd have to practice walking again. So that's what's happened. We've become conditioned souls, and we've put our love in a cast. And our muscles have atrophied. But still, that can be awakened by practice. So that's what we mean by practice. Okay, how do you do abhyas yoga? So here Prabhupada's talking about the externals. In this purport, he talks about the external practices of bhakti. Get up early in the morning, take a bath, go in the temple, chant Hare Krishna, offer flowers to the deity, cook for the deity, take prasadam, hear Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, etc. And while performing these duties, one constantly remembers him. So abhyas yoga, remember, is really a repetition of activities in the mind. So abhyas yoga means you're doing the activities with your body, and you are pulling your mind to Krishna over and over and over again. And this is the mood in abhyas yoga. This does not mean that you don't have a job. That's not what it means. So the mood of abhyas yoga is my focus is on always thinking about Krishna and engaging in activities for Krishna with my mind, body, and words. And part of my activities may be that I have to support my family or I have to go to school. But I'm not thinking that those activities are the source of my maintenance. I'm thinking Krishna is maintaining me and these activities are my appropriate service. We'll get into that more longer, a little later. So how does one go from abhyas yoga to raganuga bhakti? Krishna says, desire. The purpose of constantly bringing the mind back. Right, let me think about Krishna. Let me think about Krishna. What does Krishna look like? What is Krishna? What is he like? What are his qualities? What does he do?
What is his philosophy? The purpose of that is to develop a desire. Raghunuga Bhakti starts when the desire is strong. One of the most wonderful, wonderful purports, easy to remember where it is because it's in 1, 2, 3. The materialistic world is called the darkest region of God's creation, yet the unhappy materialist can get out of it simply by desiring to get out. You can say, well, I want to get out. How come I'm not out? We mean a strong desire. We mean, hoitukiya pratiyata, a desire that's not going to be stopped by anything, like a tidal wave, like a tsunami. Not the little waves that just come on the beach and scatter. But a tsunami wave, and not a desire for anything else. I want Krishna, and I don't want anything else. So that is the purpose of Abhyas Yoga. Okay, so here we have our progress, Abhyas Yoga, to desire to Raghunuga Bhakti. So we're starting to fill out what's on your little charts in front of you. Okay, suppose you can't do that. Suppose you've been listening to me and you thought, I can't even do that. And Baladev says, the mind is fickle. I don't have the power to restrain it. Chanchalahi mana Krishna. I can't think about Krishna. I just can't. Maybe I think about Krishna once in a week. Yeah. Maybe during one mantra of my japa, I think about Krishna. Maybe. My mind is just like a horse running here and there. So what's the direct path to Abhyas Yoga? The direct path are the angas of bhakti. So this is the purport that just should give everybody here hope. So if you've been sitting there, you know, some of you have been sitting there and said, yeah, I'm at Raghunuga Bhakti. And some of you are sitting there going, yeah, I'm already at Abhyas Yoga. Or I'm ready for Abhyas Yoga. Or I'm ready for Raghunuga Bhakti. And some of you are sitting there going, oh my God, I can't do any of this. Where am I? Maybe I should go back to the Varnashram. So here Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura says, doing services, karmani kurvam, such as hearing and singing about me, bowing to me, worshipping me, sweeping and washing my temple, picking flowers, even without remembrance of me, as previously described, you will attain perfection, siddhim, characterized by being one of my associates in prema. These are eternal activities of bhakti. What? This is for verse 10. Yeah, but this is reversed. I'm pretty sure. I'll look it up again. Maybe it's verse 9. I don't want to say definitely. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. External. Sorry. Thank you. In every yajna, there has to be checking priests. You know that? In the yajna? If the main priest says something wrong, then somebody has to correct them. So that's very important. And you want to make sure you do it at the time. Otherwise, people will go away with the wrong impression. Sometimes we come up to somebody after the class and say, oh, you know, you said this wrong. I'd actually rather be corrected in the class. Maybe some people wouldn't, but I would. So otherwise, I misinstruct people. So thank you. These are the external. So what does it mean you'll come to the perfect state? It means that by doing the external, you'll come to the internal. It doesn't mean that just by doing the external, you'll attain sitting from the external, but you'll come from external to internal. And why? Because there's a relationship between thinking, feeling, and willing. There is a relationship between thinking, our thoughts, our emotions, and our behaviors. If you can't really keep those out of sync for a long, long time. Just like Prabhupada was asked in Hawaii, do you make better progress if you're in a temple? And Prabhupada said, that depends on whether or not your mind is on another subject matter. So we see people who do the external activities of bhakti without any attempt to come to Abhyas Yoga. That after a while, you know, if they're constantly thinking about materialistic things, after a while their body will tend to follow their mind. So there has to be some effort to come to the platform of Abhyas Yoga. But the idea here is that the mind can follow the body. The body can follow the mind can follow the body. So if you're picking flowers for Krishna, eventually you'll start thinking, I'm picking flowers for Krishna. If you're chanting Krishna's name, eventually you'll start paying attention to what you're saying. That's the idea. Eventually you'll start thinking, I'm doing all these things. What am I doing? What am I doing them for? I remember I had a student who said, why do we keep studying grammar every year for 12 years, the same grammar? I said, because people just don't pay attention to it. She said, well, I don't want to study grammar anymore. I said, fine, then learn it now. And so she did. She said, if I'm going to be studying this anyway, I might as well learn it. And then she learned it. I didn't have to teach her grammar anymore. That was when she was 12. Okay, the mood and the goal in the Angas of Bhakti is a conviction that I want to go to Krishna Goloka Vrindavan. I'm not interested in going to the higher planets. I'm not interested in merging. This is essential in order for it to actually be the Angas of Bhakti and not something mixed. So in order for one to be on the direct path, one has to have this as one's goal. So I recently, I think I talked about this yesterday also. I recently finished reading Mukunda Maharaj's book, Miracle on Second Avenue, and he talks about how the devotees got this deity of Krishna, and Prabhupada named him Kartami Shai, which means the boss. So an essential feature of the direct path is that one sees that Krishna is the boss. So whatever we're doing, we do it for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord. This consciousness, and I did talk about this yesterday too, didn't I? Krishna is the company president. This consciousness makes it very easy to move from externally doing the Angas of Bhakti to Abhyas Yoga. If you're tired of just being in the external Angas of Bhakti, if that's where you are, and you want to move quickly to Abhyas Yoga and Raganuga Bhakti, this is a really good accelerator. Krishna's the boss. Krishna's the proprietor. Even if I'm washing the dishes and changing the nappies and going to work at the bank, I'm not really working for the bank. I'm not really working for my husband or my wife or my children. I'm working for Krishna. He's my boss. And if you say, well, the work I'm doing has nothing to do with Krishna, what does doing the accounting for the bank have to do with Krishna? But no, our work for Krishna is selling. What are we selling? What's our product? Prem. I'm Krishna's employee and I'm selling prem. And I get paid in prem also. It's my salary. And wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, I'm always working for the boss. I'm always working for, this is my boss. Not my parents, not my husband, not my wife, not my government, not my so-called employer. This is my boss. And this Prabhupada's explaining in the purport to 1210. Don't work for the fruits, work for the boss. And whatever you get is prasadam. You work for a company. The company may give you a desk and a chair. They may give you a computer, a phone. They give you a vacation. They throw a party for you in the office on your birthday. They give you nice maintenance so you can have a place to live. You accept that as Krishna prasadam. This is what Sudama Brahman did when he got that beautiful palace and with what he did before he got the beautiful palace. Is very nicely explained in Brahma Samhita, purport to text 61. Bhakti Sananda Sarasvati, some people say it's Jiva Goswami, wrote this incredible purport in text 61 of Brahma Samhita. How to see everything is the mercy of the Lord. I just work for Krishna, whatever I get. If my husband's nice to me, that's Krishna's prasadam. But I'm not serving my husband so he'll be nice to me. I'm not serving my wife so she'll be nice to me. Because, you know, sometimes your wife will be nice to you and sometimes she won't. And even if you do exactly the same thing. Sometimes when you mow the lawn, she'll say, thank you, dear. And sometimes when you mow the lawn, she said, yeah, but you haven't fixed the plumbing yet. It's just the way it is. And if we're thinking, my boss is my wife, my happiness depends on my wife, my happiness depends on my husband, my happiness depends on the temple commander, my happiness depends on, you know, the government, we'll be miserable. We work to please Krishna, and everything else we do is our service to Krishna. I try to make my husband happy so Krishna will smile. I try to make my wife happy so Krishna will smile. I try to please my temple commander so Krishna will smile. And whatever I get, whatever things I get, bad things too, that's Krishna's prasadam. If I get sick, that's Krishna's prasadam. If I'm healthy, that's Krishna's prasadam. You know, if my husband says, I love that lasagna, that's Krishna's prasadam. If he said, you know, you've made lasagna so much, can't you make something else? After I spent 5 hours in the kitchen thinking he loved lasagna. So that's Krishna's prasadam. Because I'm working to please Krishna. If one does that, one very quickly will come to be able to think about Krishna. Invest everything in Krishna. Like the residents of Vrindavan, when Krishna was in Kaliya, they were devastated because they'd invested everything in Krishna, like these guys who invest everything in a particular stock, and when the stock fails, they jump out the window. Whatever we're invested in, that's where our mind and our emotions go to, naturally. Yes, Mara. Can we hold that? Can we park that for a few slides? Okay. So summary of the direct path. So first engaging the body, the senses, in the external activities of bhakti, then practicing pulling the mind to Krishna, which is internal and external, then full absorption in the mind in Krishna. Okay, there's another path to Abhyas Yoga. There's another path to Abhyas Yoga. It's the indirect path. Here's the indirect path. Now, you don't really start on this path in terms of yoga until you're on the arrow itself. So the path starts on the arrow. But what's below, what's at the bottom of the screen, that's your qualification to begin the path. You can't even get on the path. You're not even allowed to get in the path. Like there's some clubs where you can't even get in unless you have a certain qualification. You know, certain sports you can't even play unless you have a certain qualification. So your qualification to start this indirect process is pious work for heaven. In other words, varnashram. I'm doing pious work, so I'll enjoy. By that, I'm qualified for working for purification instead of heaven. By doing that, I'm qualified to cultivate knowledge of the self and Brahman. We talked about that yesterday, whether the goal is the self or Brahman or both. I won't review that again, just to remind you. Then after that, you're qualified to meditate on the self. And after that, you're qualified to achieve realization of the self, Brahman, and Paramatma. So the indirect path. So first you live according to Varna and Ashrama. You get sufficient piety to qualify to do karma yoga, which is karma palatyaga. Giving up the results of your work, which you can then progress to Gyan Yoga, where you're studying the Shastras, especially the Upanishads, to cultivate knowledge of the self and Brahman. Then you have the capacity to meditate, Dhyan Yoga. And then you can, from there, you can go to see in your heart the form of Shyamasundar, who you remember is the goal. So preliminary qualification is Varnashram Dharma. Now, just a little side note. Varnashram Dharma means you take the inherent tendency of the body and mind. We had a nice talk with Chintamani Devi Dasi yesterday that really clarified this. Thank you very much. So you take the innate tendency that's in your body and mind at a particular point in your life, because ashrams are generally by age, and varna is generally just for the grihastha ashram. So you take these general tendencies and you engage them according to certain rules and regulations. So the tendencies are there. Every conditioned soul has tendencies in the varnas and in the ashramas. But what makes it varnashram dharma is you take those tendencies and you use them in a particular way. So there are people who have a tendency to generate wealth. So you use that by generating honest wealth, by protecting the natural resources, rather than by generating dishonest wealth by exploiting the natural resources. So some people have a tendency for arts and skills. So if you follow the rules, then you're protecting the arts and the skills. You're passing down the skills from generation to generation, and you're using them for the glorification of the Lord and the elevation of society. Otherwise, you can exploit the arts and the skills. You can do them in a mechanistic way. You can produce things in factories, and you can use the arts and the skills to degrade people. So varnashram dharma means you're taking your natural tendencies and you're using them, you're engaging them according to the injunctions of the scriptures. That's preliminary. You're not on the yoga ladder in varnashram. You're not on the yoga ladder in varnashram. This qualifies you to start the yoga ladder. Okay, step one. You're doing the same work as you did in varnashram, but your mood is different. And it's still selfish. But your mood here is, I'm no longer doing it to be happy on earth. I'm not being a good husband so my wife will love me. I'm not being a good wife so my husband will love me. And I can have heaven on earth. Nor am I being a good wife, good husband, good brahmachari, good sannyasi, so I can go to the heavenly planets and enjoy after death. I'm doing it so I can realize the self. It doesn't matter. I'm doing my work, whether it brings me happiness or distress, gain or loss, victory or defeat, doesn't matter. I'm doing it for purification. I'm doing it so I can be free from the desire for fruit of work, give up my material desires that are impelling this work, and come to transcendental realization. And remember Krishna said twice, karma pala tyaga? Two different verses. Okay, now how to do this? One should offer everything to Krishna. Now, remember from yesterday, which me, right? Remember all the way in the beginning of our presentation on the yoga ladder, which me is it that Krishna is talking about? So is that talking about Shyamasundara, Krishna, Vasudeva? Is it talking about Paramatma? Is it talking about Brahman? Is it even just talking about the localized self? With controlled mind. Then after one does that, one attains peace. Krishna says what comes at the end of renunciation is peace. This qualifies one for jnana yoga. Jnana yoga, you're not really engaging so much in the activities of varnashram anymore. You're mostly studying the shastras. Remember Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Prakasananda Sarasvati said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why aren't you studying the shastras? Why aren't you cultivating knowledge? Now, Bhanu Maharaj pointed out to me that some of the great jnanis in the Shastra were grihasthas, but they would have been grihasthas like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, very renounced grihasthas. Otherwise, most of the jnanis are vanaprasthas and sannyasis. They're not doing karma in the world. They're just studying. One devotee in Radhades was showing us some bits of a film about a Cartesian monastery in France where the monks only speak on Sunday. They go out of the monastery and then they can talk and laugh. Otherwise, in the monastery, Monday through Saturday, they don't say a word. They never speak. They pray together. They come together and they pray. And they don't even use like sign language. So they're just praying and studying. And then, of course, some people have to cook and clean and that kind of thing. So that's Gyan Yoga. Just studying to try to become intellectually convinced that I am not this body, that I am a soul, that the ultimate reality is Brahman. Okay, very important note is that because Krishna says that the goal of Sankhya and Karma Yoga is the same, one can go directly from Varnashram to Jnana Yoga. One doesn't have to go through Karma Yoga. So one can go from Varnashram to Karma Yoga or from Varnashram to Jnana Yoga. One can also go from karma yoga, skip gyan yoga, and go to gyan yoga. So karma yoga, how does it prepare you for gyan yoga or for gyan yoga, which we haven't described yet? What happens is the mind becomes subdued. The idea of karma yoga is you subdue the mind so that you can, because how are you going to sit down and study the scriptures all day? I mean, if we said to the devotees, okay, nobody talk, everybody take a vow of silence, just sit and study the scriptures, most of us would go nuts. I got to do something. Right? Our mind isn't controlled enough to do that. So the idea of karma palatyaga, you get enough peace that you can control the mind and do gyan yoga or dhyan yoga. So the bridge from karma yoga to either gyan yoga or dhyan yoga. So you can go karma, gyan, dhyan, or you can go karma, dhyan, or you can go gyan, dhyan. Is peace. Twajak chantir anantaram. At the end of renunciation is peace. So that's also the foundation for abhyas yoga, isn't it? Not only is peace the foundation for entering into gyan yoga or dhyan yoga, but it's also the qualification for entering into bhakti abhyas yoga, that you can be able to control your mind. So freedom is the result of detachment gained through working for purification instead of heaven, which Krishna also describes. You're full. You're satisfied, therefore you're not disturbed by all the desires. Remember we talked about yesterday, it's not repression, it's not resistance, it's satisfaction. And without this peace, one cannot even find any happiness. Now, how does the bhakta attain peace, which qualifies us for abhyas yoga? By seeing Krishna as the boss. He's the one in charge. I'm doing everything for him, and he's my best friend. Everything he gives me is his prasadam. It's much easier to attain that peace that way than just doing all your work with detachment for the result and just kind of offering it to the self. Okay, step three on the yoga ladder is dhyan yoga. Dhyan yoga is meditation. Sometimes there are householders like Kasyapa Muni who engage in dhyan yoga. But generally, again, this is for the renunciates. And then they not only are they stopping varnashram, they're even stopping breathing. They're really not doing any activity. And they're withdrawing the senses mechanically and focusing it within. Okay, now how do you get from karma yoga, gyan yoga, or dhyan yoga to the abhyas yoga of bhakti? Now, by the way, I asked a very accomplished jnana yogi, who's also a second initiated, very serious member of the Hare Krishna movement, who was born in the movement as an accomplished jnana yogi, who was, as a young child, was able to focus the mind totally on the Lord within the heart. And I asked this devotee, I said, could you go from dhyan yoga directly to raganuga bhakti? And this devotee said, no. You'd have to go first to abhyas yoga. So even the dhyan yogi, why? Because what do they have to abhyas? What do they have to practice? They've got to practice meditating on Shamasundara, because they're not meditating on Shamasundara, they're meditating on Vishnu. So therefore, from any step on the yoga ladder, one has to go to abhyas yoga, not to raganuga bhakti. And what does Prabhupada say is the bridge? The grace of some devotee. Which gives you what? Faith. So you have peace. Because remember, to get to abhyas yoga from bhakti, you have to have peace. They have peace. And they also have to have faith by the grace of a devotee. Yes. Abhyas means repetition. Well, see, in bhakti, you're always getting the grace of the devotee. You'd have to get the grace of a devotee, yes. Because otherwise, how would you know what to do? So, yeah, the grace isn't just some mystical thing, you know. Ooh, grace. But, well, you get some instruction. and some guidance. What is the goal? Okay, here's the little chart you have in front of you. So from the external angas of bhakti, you achieve peace from seeing Krishna as the boss, from which you can do abhyasa yoga, where you're practicing to pull the mind. From there, you get desire, which brings you to raganuga bhakti. In the yoga ladder, first one may be doing ugra karma, vikarma, sinful activities. Then when you come to karma kanda, then from there you're qualified for karma yoga. Karma kanda gives you the piety to perform karma yoga, which gives you the peace to go to either gyan yoga or dhyan yoga. By performing gyan yoga, you get the peace to go to dhyan yoga. If you stop at karma kanda, you can have a good birth on earth, or you go to heaven. If you stop at karma yoga, you can be born in a family of yogis. You can go to swarga, or the higher planets of the Prajapatis. If you stop at gyan yoga, you can merge in the Brahman. If you stop at dhyan yoga, you can meditate on Paramatma, go to the planet of Paramatma in this universe. And if you add faith to dhyan yoga, gyan yoga, or karma yoga, you can go to abhyasa yoga. From karma kanda or varnashram, you can go to the angas of bhakti. You can also go to the angas of bhakti from ugra karma. And here we see in relationship to varnashram, and I'm not going to discuss this in depth, but here that varnashram is optional in the angas of bhakti and in abhyasa yoga. You can perform bhakti yoga without following all the rules of varnashram, although if you do follow the rules of varnashram, your life will be more peaceful. We'd certainly recommend it, but it's optional. Okay, so here are our two paths. The angas of bhakti, which directly give you peace so you can perform abhyasa yoga, which gives you desire so you can perform raganuga bhakti, so you can attain the goal of loving service to Shyama Sundar, or the indirect ladder, which gives you peace. You have to add faith, which will bring you to abhyasa yoga, which brings you to desire, which brings you to raganuga bhakti. Somebody who listened to my class yesterday over the internet said, well, I seem to be a little bit of both. I seem to be doing some karma yoga and some bhakti. Does it have to be one or the other? So last night I included this slide, that there's also mixed. You can do karma mijra bhakti or gyan mijra bhakti. Oh, that's not recommended. One of the reasons I'm doing this presentation is to try to have us avoid doing karma mijra bhakti or gyan mijra bhakti, or trying to avoid us going up the yoga ladder. Okay. Summary of them. So Prabhupada says it's a long road from karma yoga to bhakti yoga. When karma yoga increases in knowledge, it becomes gyan. When gyan increases in meditation, then it's called astanga yoga. One surpasses that, then you come to bhakti. It's a long road. Just like in Tirupati, there's the 10-kilometer path where there's no shade, and there's no toilets, and there's no water. And then there's the 3-kilometer path where there's shade, and there's toilets, and there's water, and there's benches. Oh, and there's even piped-in chanting from the top of the mountain. So the indirect path is a long road. And Prabhupada says, why should you walk up all the stairs when you can take an elevator? So you can go step by step, or you can go directly in the lift. Okay. So we have a few minutes. So your question, Maharaj, was the difference of consciousness in the levels of bhakti? So the consciousness of somebody who's in karma kanda, and most people today are not in karma kanda. Most people are doing vikarma, or they have some mix. They have a little karma and a little vikarma. So the consciousness of that person is, I am the center, and I want to enjoy this world. So the vikarmi is, I want to enjoy this world by stealing, and the karmi is, I want to enjoy the world by paying. But both persons are interested in enjoying the world. They're not interested in the boss. So the vikarmi is working in Krishna, everybody is working in Krishna's company, but the vikarmi is working in Krishna's company and stealing pencils and maybe even embezzling funds. So their consciousness is, how working here can I get something for myself? The karmi is like, they don't care about the boss. They don't care about the mission of the boss. Doesn't matter to them. They're working at the job so they can make money, so they can enjoy. Then, yeah? Oh, two different types of devotees. Okay, so the beginning devotee, if you're a devotee, if you're actually a beginning devotee. Yes. Oh, okay. So someone who's at the angas of bhakti, they're making an effort. So they might still get upset if their husband doesn't like the lasagna. You know, because their heart isn't really that Krishna's the boss yet. But when they get upset that their husband doesn't like the lasagna, they can step back and say, wait a minute, who am I working for? I'm working for Krishna. He's the boss. The reason I got upset is that, you know, I thought that my husband was my shelter and my center instead of Krishna. And they're bringing the mind back. And the consciousness of somebody in the external is still to some extent, you know, I'm here to enjoy the world, but at least you're aware of it. You have some awareness that that's my problem. You don't think that the problem is that the temple authorities treated me unfairly, or that the problem is that the airline lost my baggage, or the problem is that I'm not making enough money. So even if the mind goes to those things, you're able to say, wait a minute, that's not the real problem. The real problem is that I'm attached to the world. The real problem is I think that, you know, the government's supplying my needs, or the temple commander's supplying my needs. Wait a minute, Krishna's supplying my needs. Then the consciousness of one in Nibhyas Yoga is you're really very aware of that. You don't deviate from that very much at all. You're much more, everything is Krishna, everything is Krishna. Look, here's Krishna. Krishna is so happy when I'm serving his devotee. I'm doing this for Krishna, I'm doing this for Krishna. And if your mind wanders, it's just briefly, and you pull it back. You know, if there's some disturbance in the mind, like Jed Bharata was briefly disturbed when Maharaj Rahugana insulted him. But he didn't react, he didn't respond with that. So below that stage, you may respond, you know, you may yell at your wife. So you come home and your wife, instead of saying, oh, thank you, dear, for working so hard for the family, she says, why are you home 15 minutes late? Don't you know that dinner's cold? And you haven't fixed the plumbing? You know, so when on the lower stage, I say, don't you appreciate me? Don't you care about me? What's wrong with you? Don't you know how hard I'm working? And then, oh, wait a minute. Whew, okay. Why do I think my wife is a source of my satisfaction? Krishna is the source of my satisfaction. I'm not serving my wife so that she'll be pleased with me. I'm serving my wife so Krishna will be pleased with me. Right. Okay. Sorry, dear. You know, whereas in Abhyas Yoga, the wife is saying, why'd you come home 15 minutes late? And the mind may go to, Krishna, I'm taking care of this wife to please you. She's your devotee. She's a jiva. I'm trying to take care of her and serve her nicely for your pleasure. You're the one who's paying my salary, not my wife. I'm dedicating everything to you. How wonderful you are. There you are in the heart of my wife. Why is my wife angry at me? Because she thinks I'm Krishna. How foolish she is. She thinks I'm going to satisfy all of her desires. My poor wife. Let me see if I can help her to come to Krishna consciousness. My dear wife, the reason you're upset with me is you think that I'm going to give you eternal love exactly the way you want it, in a perfect form forever. I'm going to be exactly the person you want me to be, and I'm going to fulfill all of your emotional and physical and transcendental desires, and you know I can't do it. Why don't you give your heart to Krishna? So that's on Abhyas Yoga. And I don't know if I can really talk about Raganuga Bhakti, Maharaj. The consciousness of somebody in Raganuga Bhakti. But in Raganuga Bhakti, that person is actually realized. In Abhyas Yoga, you may get some hint of your eternal nature. You may get some intuitive grasp that I'm a cowherd boy, or I'm Krishna's parent, or I'm Krishna's gopi. And you're cultivating the greed for that. In Raganuga Bhakti, you already have the greed for that. And you're actually living in a different sphere completely. You know, your consciousness in Raganuga Bhakti is going to be, you know, Krishna is my lover and my husband is one of Krishna's girls. Yes. Yes, and he's saying that I'm just your, he said, I'm earning money just to maintain your maidservants and servants. So you're seeing that your family members and the other people at the bank, and that they're all Krishna's servants, and I'm taking care of them as service to Krishna. And you're living in a different sphere completely. You know, there's no question of thinking that you're going to get satisfaction from anything material. So I can just speak about that in theory. Yes, Prabhu.